Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Faith is not only to result in visible progress or prosperity, but sometimes faith just enables us to endure affliction and even succumb to some extent, at least visibly, to that affliction. But nevertheless, that's not the end of it.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the book of Hebrews. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Hebrews, chapter 11, verses 23 through 40, in a message titled, Faith in the Midst of Affliction. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
The life of a Christian is really, this is what it's like. In so many ways, we're constantly facing situations where the deck is stacked against us all the time. You know, I have often felt like this. Sometimes in my prayer times, I would express this to the Lord. I felt like a fighter with both hands tied behind his back. So it's like, Lord, you've called me to fight this battle, but I've got both hands tied behind my back. You can't fight that well with both hands tied behind your back. And yet oftentimes that's a situation for us where we're outnumbered so often. We're out-resourced so often. But here's the thing. When you look at the biblical record, you find that this is always the way God has done it. God has always put himself in the position of being the underdog, so to speak. He's always put his people in the position of being the underdog. Why does he do that? Well, he does it so that he can demonstrate his power. He does it so that we can see that he is faithful and that, he really is the one who is at work. And so whether it be the walls of Jericho or the deliverance of Rahab or any of these other things that he goes on to mention, we see a similar kind of thing in every single case. The odds are stacked against the people of God, but the people of God end up victorious, but they end up victorious because of their confidence in the Lord, because of their trust in the Lord. So for the people that are the original recipients of the letter, they're feeling right now that everything's kind of stacked against them. They're feeling like, well, wait a second, where's the fulfillment of the promises of Jesus the Messiah sitting upon the throne of David? How come that hasn't happened yet? And why is it that we're being ostracized? Why is it that we're being excluded from the community? Why is it that we're actually suffering persecution? And they're beginning to waver. They're beginning to falter. They're beginning to consider turning away. But the author comes back and reminds them, no, this is the way it always has been. It's always been like this for the people of God. It always looks like God's people are on the verge of extinction. It always looks like they're right there, just about to lose the game. But it's when that happens that God steps in. Somebody put it this way, and I think there's a lot of truth to it. God likes to build the drama. He likes to let things get pushed to the limit before he steps in. Now, I think most of us would rather that he didn't do that. We don't need to go that far with it. Let's just nip it in the bud before it develops and gets to be too much of a problem. But when you look back at these stories in Scripture, you find that no, God, he tends to always build the drama. You think of the Israelites when they came out of Egypt, and you remember, Pharaoh finally lets them go, and they go out and they march forth in victory, and they make their journey. And then they come to this place of resting. They set up camp, and they set up camp with two mountain ranges on either side of them and the sea at their back. And it just looks like a good place to camp. But what happens? Pharaoh hears that they're kind of in a trap. They've got the sea at their back, mountain ranges on their side. Pharaoh says, this is the perfect setup. We can come in and we can destroy them. And you wonder, okay, well, why did God lead them there? Because the Lord led them to that spot. Well, to build the drama so that he could exercise his power and destroy the opposing army of Pharaoh. And that's so often what he does with us as well. He lets the drama build. He lets everything develop. And he calls us to trust him through that. And so we see it over and over and over again in history. So he references Jericho. He references the harlot Rahab. And then in verse 32, he says, and what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets. So these same kinds of stories, like I said, they just happen over and over and over and over again. Gideon is such a classic story. I don't know if you're familiar with the story of Gideon. I think it's Judges in the 6th chapter where, you know, God appears to Gideon. He's like the least likely candidate to be a deliverer for the nation, and he knows it himself. And so when the angel says, you know, appears to him and says, oh, mighty man, you know, go in this your strength and deliver Israel. He's like, okay, you got the wrong address. You're talking to the wrong person. It's certainly, I'm not a mighty man. And he says, look, I belong to the smallest tribe, and my family, my father's family, were pretty insignificant people in our tribe. But the angel insists, no, go in this your strength and deliver Israel. And, you know, Gideon just, he has a hard time believing that this is really going to happen. So he goes through this test where he has a fleece, this thing of wool. And he says, Lord, if you're really calling me, you know, I'm going to put it out. And if, you know, if you really want me to go, then, you know, let it be wet one time, let it be dry another time. And sure enough, just as he asks, you know, God gives him the confirmation. But then when everything is finally settled and Gideon realizes that, you know, yes, God is indeed calling me to do this, he gathers an army together, and it seems like a pretty substantial army, but in comparison to the Midianites, it's a very small army. But God looks at it and he says, your army is too big. He's got 32,000 men, and God says, you have way too many men. So he says, tell everybody that's afraid, everybody that's just recently married, everybody that just doesn't want to go to war, tell them it's okay, you can stay home. And so they said, fine, and you know, they ended up with an army of about 10,000. And you know what God said? Gideon, your army's still too big. And so God narrows it down, and he narrows it down to 300. 300? So it just makes no sense whatsoever. But God said this. He said, you know, because Gideon's saying, Lord, this doesn't make any sense. But God said this. He said, you know, I know Israel. I know if I gave you the victory with the 10,000 or the 20,000, you would think that it was you who did it. So I'm going to make it so ridiculous that nobody will have any question about how this battle was won. And that's what he did. He took the 300. Now, the author says, I don't have time to tell you about Gideon. I just told you about Gideon, but those are the kinds of stories. But it's the same thing once again. Like I said, it's just over and over again, it's the same thing. God's people are outnumbered. God's people are out-resourced. God's people appear to be the underdog, but in the end, God wins. You know, I even look at some of the things happening today in the culture. I look at some of the things happening in the nation, many things happening around the world. And, you know, there's a lot of battles going on in a lot of different areas. And I think there are times when the enemy gloats because he has apparently won a battle in certain areas. And, you know, people would even say today that, well, you know, in the United States, Christianity is on the decline and progressivism is on the rise and, you know, humanism and all of that, you know, is becoming the dominant view. And, you know, Christianity is being beat back. I mean, some people want to, you know, beat back the influence of Christianity. And so they're, in a sense, what they're saying is, you know, we're winning this battle. But, you know, the reality is the war has already been won. And God has won the war. Jesus won that war on the cross. And although we might appear to be losing certain battles here and there, the fact of the matter is, in the end, God will be victorious, even though still today, we as God's people, and, you know, obviously there are other places where it would even seem more blatantly obvious that the people of God are losing the battle. Looking over into the Middle East, where, you know, Christians have been driven out of their ancient homeland. Many of them have been brutally murdered and all, you know, somebody looks on it and says, wow, you know, look at what's happening here. And of course, those who are perpetrating those crimes, they would attribute their success to the greatness of their God over the Christian God even. But the fact of the matter is, the war's already been won. And this is nothing new. Everything has always kind of come along this same sort of way where God allows us to be seen as weak and inferior and lacking abilities and resources, but he comes in and brings a victory. So it's through faith that he goes on here now in verse 33, he says, they subdued kingdoms, they worked righteousness, they obtained promises, they stopped the mouths of lions, they quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead raised to life. Now in this first section here, he talks about the victories that resulted from the faith of the people. And everything that he just mentioned would manifest itself as a victory. You know, eventually there would be a victory that would be seen. So the victory would be seen through the subdued kingdoms, through the obtaining of the promises, through the stopping of the mouths of lions. And, you know, if you know your Old Testament well enough, you know, he's just kind of marching his way through the Old Testament. And even though he's not giving the specific details, he's talking about events that are recorded for us all the way through the Old Testament. So Daniel is the one that stopped the mouths of lions. You remember he was thrown into the lion's den, but the lions didn't overcome him. Quenched the violence of fire. Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were thrown in the furnace by Nebuchadnezzar, but they were not harmed by the flames. So he goes through this list, and everything here in the first portion of it, their faith results in a visible, tangible victory after they go through this season of challenge. But it results in a visible, tangible victory. Now, for all of us, probably, that's what we always hope for in regard to the outcome of our faith. We're always hoping and believing and trusting and thinking that, you know, well, if our faith is strong and if we're really believing God, then the end result is going to be the result that we desire. We're going to have a victory. We're going to have a visible victory. People are going to see that, you know, look, they trusted God and this is what happened. And you know, it's a positive outcome. But listen to what he goes on to say. He says, others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two, were tempted, were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and in caves of the earth. So here's the other side of it. You see, the victory of faith doesn't always show itself in this present life in some visible way. Some tangible way where we can see, look, you know, look at this person trusted God, this person had faith, and look how God delivered them from that. It doesn't always work that way. And it's important for us to realize that. We had somebody call in this week to the radio broadcast, and this was the question. And the woman was very honest. She said, you know, my faith is being rocked. My faith is being shaken because of what I see happening to Christians all around the world. How can it be that God is allowing for his people to suffer the way some of these people are suffering? And I took her right to this passage, and I read this passage to her over the air. I said, look, we've got to realize, we've got to remember that faith always brings a victory, but the victory doesn't always look the same. And sometimes the victory is not seen in the present, it will be seen in the future. And so faith is not only to result in visible progress or prosperity, but sometimes faith just enables us to endure affliction and even succumb to some extent, at least visibly, to that affliction. But nevertheless, that's not the end of it. There's a bigger picture. There's an eternal picture. And this is what we have to get in our minds. Because we're always thinking in the here and now. We're thinking in the present. We're thinking about what is right in front of us. And quite often, we're not thinking about the bigger picture of eternity. But he puts these others right alongside of those who did these tremendous things by faith and saw the positive results. He puts those who were tortured. They didn't accept deliverance, meaning that they were executed. And others had trials of mocking, scourging, and so forth. And, you know, as we read through the scriptures, we see that this is indeed what has happened many times over. You can't read the New Testament without seeing the context is so often a context of tribulation and suffering and affliction. You know, somebody said this years ago, and I think it's true. They said the promise of the Old Testament is prosperity. The promise of the New Testament is adversity. Now, there is out there, there are those voices that would say to us, you know, if you're a real man or woman of faith, that's going to be evidenced by material prosperity. It's going to be evidenced by success in life. It's going to be evidenced by health. And, you know, that's the indicators that you're a you know, really a person of faith. We can see that you're a man or a woman of faith because we see a blessing, and it's material is the way people are referring to that. But that's not a New Testament idea. The New Testament is full of examples of people who are materially suffering and physically suffering with sometimes health issues, sickness, but sometimes with sufferings like we're reading about here, mockings and scourgings and imprisonments and things like that. Because you see, the message of the New Testament is that we are pilgrims and sojourners here in this world. Our citizenship is in heaven. And if anybody should have an eternal perspective, it should be us, because that's the perspective that the New Testament is always pushing us toward. And so, like I said, with the woman that called, I just pointed her to these verses here and reminded her that you can very much be living by faith, and your faith can be absolutely genuine and a powerful faith, but it doesn't translate necessarily into what we would look at and say, well, that was a great victory. But it is a great victory because it's a victory on the larger level of eternity rather than the smaller level of the present situation. And so he says concerning them, that these all, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. Therefore, chapter 12, verse 1, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. So, the writer, he's done this two or three times now, but he keeps going back to this. He's constantly pointing back to the men and women of faith from the Old Testament period. He's reminding them over and over again that their understanding of God, the revelation that they had of God, even the experience that they had with the Lord was inferior to what the new covenant has brought us. And so he's arguing this way. He's saying, look, if these people whose understanding of God was limited in comparison to yours, if these people whose, in many ways, their experience with God was limited compared to ours, because we have the indwelling of the Spirit. They did not have the indwelling of the Spirit. We know the full story. They only knew part of the story. If they had such faith, how is it that your faith is wavering? We need to learn an example from them. We need to take from them a lesson about trusting God. These, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, but we have. And so, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, the great cloud of witnesses are all the people that he's referring to, that he's been looking back on. We are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses. And since that is the case, we are to lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. And here's the key word. We are to run with endurance the race that is set before us. Endurance. That's been a major theme all the way through the epistle. Perseverance, endurance, patience. The Christian life is a long distance run. It's not a sprint. And the sooner we learn that, the better off we will be. It's a long distance run. It's a long distance run with plenty of obstacles. Paul referred to having fought the good fight, finished his race, or finished his course, is another translation. And the word there refers to an obstacle course. And you know, that's what the Christian life is like. It is like a long distance race with all kinds of obstacles. How do we navigate that? Well, we've got to have endurance. We've got to know right up front that, you know, this is a long distance race. And we've got to be really, you know, just committed to the fact that that's what it is. You know, for anyone who does anything, you know, athletically, stretching, or you know, something where you're really having to exert effort, you know that so much of your ability to persevere through whatever it is that you're doing, you know, so much of it starts in the mind. You know, if you step into something with the mentality like, oh, I'm never going to do this. You know, I'm never going to finish this course. I'm never going to succeed at this. You know, you probably won't. That's kind of the way it works. But if you come at it, and even before you get to the physical part of it, you just come at it and you say, you know, I'm going to do this. It's the endurance element. So much of it is, I mean, part of it is physical, but there's another part of it that is very much a mental thing. And spiritually, there's a parallel there. If we are in this race of faith, so to speak, and we're not even considering the fact that it's a long distance race, it's a race that needs endurance, and we are thinking in terms of, you know, I'm gonna run this race and finish it, then when it starts to get challenging, when it becomes more difficult, that will be the time when the temptation will become great to just back off, to pull out, to give up.
For the month of September, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled By Searching, My Journey Through Doubt into Faith by Isabel Kuhn. This book is the inspiring autobiography of Elizabeth Kuhn's search that both ended with Jesus and continued with Jesus as a missionary to China, as she discovered God's faithfulness, provision, and presence. The book, By Searching, My Journey Through Doubt into Faith by Isabel Kuhn, is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. So we encourage you to call us right now at 0208-466-5365 or visit us online at brianbrodison.uk to order by searching My Journey Through Doubt Into Faith by Isabel Kuhn. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you by dialing 0208-466-5365 or by writing us at Back to Basics Radio, P.O. Box 647, Bromley, Kent, BR14WQ. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Hebrews. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.